G-minus 46, Ford McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. William Godfrey's guess that something was wrong with Piper wasn't the wild stab in the dark it seemed like to the suddenly concerned-looking Henry and Mr. Bird, both of whom had missed the moment when he saw Emma hand Piper to Sacco in what previously struck the ICA chairman as a bizarrely random move, but which was now beginning to make some degree of sense in his mind.
"Don't ever ask about her again," Clark replied in his firmest, deepest tone. "And if you ever even speak of having a suspicion,"
although to Emma's mind, Clark's reply had only confirmed to Godfrey that any such suspicion was correct, the look in the man's eyes upon receiving this warning convinced her that it had been worthwhile.
"So, can I speak to them about everything else?" Godfrey asked.
Emma looked at Dan, who nodded. Dan then turned to the messengers with a simple request. "Can you get Billy and Timo, though? I want them here, and it makes sense to only explain everything one last time instead of once now and once when they arrive. Once they get here, we'll have everyone who knows about the architects."
"Well, except Phil," Clark said. "He was here that night, remember?"
"Phil's not alone, though," Mr. Bird chimed in from his standing position next to Henry McCarthy's wheelchair at the side of the couch.
"Bird's right," Henry confirmed. "Right now, I'd say Phil is either back in the bar or still talking to Chip."
"Wait," Clark jumped. "Did you say Chip? Chip Petrovich?"
Henry nodded.
"He's working as a lawyer, just like his old man Diamond."
"Makes sense. But what's he doing back in Birchwood?" Clark asked.
Emma blew air from her lips.
"Right now, who cares?" she said, speaking for a few of the others, too. "If we're getting Timo, can we just get Timo? I don't care who Chip is right now, and I like Phil, but he's not exactly the quarterback of this team. Timo brings things the rest of us don't in terms of resources, and like Dan said, he has been in on a lot of secrets over the years. Nothing phases him. He always has a clear mind for dealing with problems."
"Exactly," Dan agreed. "So, Leisha?"
The alien nodded in his awkward but endearing way, and then disappeared in a flash he brought forth without warning. After one of the shortest intervals anyone could remember, which was particularly impressive given that Leisha had this time gathered not one but two friendly and unfrightened allies, both Timo Fiori and Billy Kendrick stood in the increasingly crowded living room.
"Oh, thank God," the Italian exhaled. "I was worried that something big had gone wrong."
Billy Kendrick, harboring some remarkable transcript-related news of his own, said nothing just yet, but forced some smiles in various directions.
"Something big has gone wrong," Clark said.
Timo looked around at the troubled expressions which filled the room. The initial relief of seeing Godfrey alive and well, particularly alongside Dan and Tara, was quickly fading now that he saw how concerned they all looked.
"Are you all talking to them now?" Timo asked,
gesturing towards the aliens and taking care not to ask anything too overt about telepathy or the remarkable patches which safely enabled it, astutely assuming that the group may have understandably decided against looping Godfrey in on certain things.
"What's the story?"
Clark quickly rushed to fetch some more spare patches for Billy and Timo, as well as his father Henry and Mr. Bird, and finally Chairman Godfrey. He returned rapidly and handed them out, with neither Dan nor Emma objecting to any of this.
"We're all going to cover everything now," Clark continued, this time out loud. "Except Piper, you guys. Don't think or ask anything specific about her, okay?"
With Godfrey present, the men all understood why this was the case. Avoiding certain thoughts was always easier said than done, with telling someone not to think about something usually acting as the fastest shortcut to ensuring they did. But the nature of the telepathy patches meant that only thoughts they consciously opted to share with the others would be broadcast. For this reason, no one was overly concerned. Only Godfrey was new to the concept of the patches, and he reacted with predictable amazement as the one placed on his neck suddenly stuck itself in place.
"They come off really easily," Clark said, reassuring him.
Godfrey nodded, having engaged in similarly silent conversations with Leisha and even Dan via the very different medium of cables in the UN's old table room, The ICA chairman wasn't overawed by the nature of the telepathic thoughts arriving in his mind. The same couldn't be said for the content of these thoughts, however, which positively stunned him as they began to flood in. With Dan's permission, Leisha very quickly, and in a manner more succinct than any human could have managed, began with a retelling of their discoveries inside the outpost and everything they now knew about the deceitful architects. These introductory points were by now only news to Godfrey, but they were explosive enough to prompt him to take a seat while he tried to process them. As Leisha continued, piece by piece, expressions around the room stiffened and fell to reflect the new details various individuals were learning. From various positions of knowledge, it only took a few minutes for the entire room to be on exactly the same page on everything except Piper's status, of which Godfrey was left with suspicions rather than knowledge, and which the recently arrived foursome of Henry, Mr. Bird, Timo, and Billy didn't yet realize was once again of grave concern. They would hear about that very soon, when someone could talk to them without Godfrey listening, but for now, there were more than enough explosive revelations circling the living room for anyone's mind to deal with. After a rapid rundown of the initial architect-related revelations that everyone except Godfrey was already familiar with, Leisha dived into the news of the transcripts that had been discovered on New Kerguelen in recent days. That the architects had left enormous transcripts on the external surface to implore future visitors to never allow the messengers back into their lost city of New Birchwood raised all kinds of questions, but to the messengers' surprise, it also raised an interruption from Billy Kendrick. Billy's interjection to share his own remarkable discovery of a transcript on Earth, and at Dortlu Tepe no less, stunned everyone. His description of the transcript was even more incredible given the clear parallel to what Leisha had just shared, for on Earth, the architects had left a message to stress the importance of making sure humans never dug up the secrets buried at the remarkable Turkish site. The questions and confusions this raised were on a whole new level, with the implication that the architects had returned to Earth long after the initial visit that was retold by Dortlu Tepe's sole excavated pillar, alone, rewriting the group's understanding of everything they thought they knew about the nature of the deceitful race's relationship with humanity. Although several people in the living room had all kinds of questions to ask Billy about his find, those would have to wait until after Leisha finished his relentless rundown of recent developments. The information the alien delivered, while fast and detailed, certainly had nothing in common with the overwhelming deluge effect that came with glancing at an information-rich transcript. Seconds later, William Godfrey and all four of the more recent arrivals gasped loudly at Leisha's revelation that a gateway had been discovered on New Kerguelen, one the messengers firmly believed would lead to the architect's home world. Leisha ignored the telepathic questions that came his way and simply responded with thoughts that were somehow louder than those coming from the surprised humans in front of him. Nearing the end, Leisha then explained that an exodus was well underway from the messenger's great shelter to the great city of New Birchwood that had been kept from them by the architects. Billy interjected again at this stage, and this time Leisha allowed his silent question to be heard unchallenged. "Shouldn't you keep the city clear until we can search it? If there are things the architects don't want you to find there, surely it makes sense to carefully look for them before you start repopulating the place." For his part, Dan didn't disagree. A similar point had come up in his own mind earlier, and he still saw a lot of merit in it.
"It's a vast city," Leisha replied. "The more of us there are, the quicker we will find whatever might be waiting for us."
"I don't know," Billy sighed, thinking as an archaeologist. "There's always a danger of contamination. But about this gate, if we're ever going to entertain going through it, we can't entertain it yet. We now know beyond a shadow of a doubt that there are things they don't want us to find on Earth, and there are things they don't want us to find on New Kerguelen. If anyone is asking me, I don't think our priority has to be poring over every inch of Dortlu Tepe and New Birchwood until we know more about what we're dealing with. We also need to look for more outdoor transcripts. And I have some ideas on that." Dan cleared his throat. "For the sake of playing devil's advocate, Billy, I don't know that we have to fear the gate as much as it seems like you do. Think about it.
This gate had to be intended for the messengers, not for the architects themselves to use, because why would the architects need a gate? This goes back to the chicken and egg point you made in the outpost about how the uplift powers clearly all came from the architects. What I mean is, if the architects need a gate to get to New Kaer Galen, and then here, how did they get here in the first place, before there was a gate?
It could just be a shortcut, Billy replied, not arguing in any sense and taking Dan's consider the problem from all angles approach in the intended spirit.
You know, like they could have built this crazy gateway once they knew where New Kaer Galen was, having first reached it by slightly more conventional means?
Dan shook his head. I don't think so. They gave the messengers an uplift power that lets them teleport on top of the core powers. The powers are all limited, sure, but probably by design. They probably didn't want to make their guard dogs too powerful. But if the architects can casually grant these powers to a different race by way of physical devices and cables, imagine the kind of power that's within them. I mean, what even is the teleportation power? Is teleportation just an imprecise word we can understand? A concept the messengers can understand? With everything else that's always going on, we've hardly even thought about what's actually going on when these flashes happen. Whatever it is, for all we know, it could be interdimensional.
To be honest, Dan, Billy said, blowing air from his lips, that stuff is all so far beyond me that I can't give you a meaningful reply. Interdimensionality is one thing, but it's all so fast. What if there's a time-manipulating aspect? And believe me, in all my extraterrestrial research and theorizing over the years, I've tried to wrap my head around this stuff. Well, the instantaneous travel doesn't make sense according to physics as we know it, so I do think there probably is an interdimensional or temporal element at play here. I just don't understand it.
Judging by the silence, no one did.
But, Billy said, there is a big part of me that wants to fight the instinctive fear. I'm talking about everything we know about the architects here, not just about the gate. Sure, they're grade A assholes for what they did on New Kaer Galen with the lies they spun about the shelter and the machines. We also know from Dortlu Tepe that they didn't want to engage with us and don't want us to see whatever else is down there waiting to be dug up, but maybe only because they're scared of us. The other pillars could be covered in wisdom about space travel or something like that. Exactly the kind of knowledge the architects don't want us to have because they think we have this dangerous mix of intelligence and aggressiveness.
Dan was listening even more intently than the others, always glad to have Billy and his sharp mind around, but now more so than ever.
And the thing is, Billy said, I don't think we should assume the architects are still around at all, or at least in a way that could be troublesome for us. Think about it. They used the messengers as a buffer against us and lied to keep us from them. But now the messengers are engaging with us, giving us uplift powers, taking us to New Kaer Galen. We're helping them find the truth about the architects. How meta can you get? And the architects aren't stopping any of it. Same with Dortlu Tepe. They don't want us to see what's there, but they haven't done anything to stop us now that we've found it. From what we saw in the outpost, it seems like they left New Kaer Galen in a hurry. So maybe something bad did happen to them, and now they're totally out of the picture.
Dan was nodding now. Billy continued.
And there's one unifying thought here, Dan, following on from what you said about the gate probably not being for their own use. I don't see why our crossing the gate, hypothetically, would alert the architects to our presence in any dangerous way. With New Birchwood, Dortlu Tepe, and everything else, if they still cared about us and were still watching, they would have interfered by now. So either they don't care, or for some reason they can't pay attention anymore. On that last idea, maybe the same thing that rushed them away from New Kaer Galen has taken them away from watching us all together. Both of our species, I mean. Both of our planets. The gateway we've already traversed leads from New Kaer Galen to Earth, so maybe the other one on New Kaer Galen leads to another safe planet altogether. Not another race, since none was ever mentioned, and neglecting to mention them would more than slightly defeat the presumed goal of having the messengers monitor them, too, but another planet. When the dust settles, this could be an opportunity. You know, for the sake of playing devil's advocate.
Billy, there is one more thing that you and some of the others haven't heard yet, Sacco said, moving swiftly on before any of those others could reply and taking over from Leisha,
With a heavy heart and sullen lilt to his tone, he then relayed the story of a trio of former squadron trainees attempting to fly through the gate, only to be shot down by more experienced members of that defunct caste-like organization. No one else spoke, allowing those just learning this news to internalize it as best they could. With this, Sacco went on, the already intense fear of the gate has been joined by societal division and unrest of a kind we have never seen. This happened today, after Leisha came to deliver news of the gate. So with respect, our absolute priority has to be bringing Dan and Terra to New Kerguelen to settle and unite our populace before the situation becomes unsalvageable.
You can't be serious, Dan.
Henry McCarthy spoke aloud, breaking the pattern of silence as he directly addressed his youngest son. Dan only nodded. He would explain everything to Henry when Godfrey wasn't listening. Everything about Piper and the inexplicable powers of something akin to foresight she had demonstrated earlier in the day, and Henry would soon come to understand. For the first time, Timo Fiori joined the discussion.
So it sounds like we need to split up, he said, talking aloud, as now seemed to be the way. Billy, why don't you tell me more about these transcripts you found on your computer, and we'll get everything up on the big screens at Fiori Frontieri. Dan, Tara, it sounds like you guys are going to be dealing with the biggest problem of all. And Emma, at some point, someone is going to have to address Godfrey's disappearance before we start seeing the kind of unrest that Sacco just described. Emma nodded before turning to Dan. She gulped and held his eyes.
So I guess you're going back.
It wasn't a question. Seems like it, he said. But we'll be as quick as we can. Right, Tara? Tara tried to force a confident reply, one which convinced everyone except the older sister who knew her best.
So quick, you won't even know we're gone,